Welcome to Hour 2 of the Arizona Republic for Tuesday, November 26th, 2024. I'm your volunteer broadcaster, Joe Napoli. We start Hour 2 with obituaries, and first we have Skip Johnson. He died on November 11th, was 80 years old, and was born in Los Angeles, California. In lieu of a funeral celebration, the family asked that you take a road trip. Next, we have Robert Tatum. He was 57 and died on November 19th. Services will be held on November 26th at 11 a.m. and are being handled by the Merrill Funeral and Cremation Center. Finally, we have Jack Will. He was 93 and died on November 11th. He was born in Chicago, Illinois. There are no services planned. In lieu of flowers, donations can be made to the Lutheran Bible Translators at lbt.org. And that will do it for today's obituaries. We start business news with an article about the Arizona Corporation Commission titled Tovar, Arizona Corporation Commission Probe, A Witch Hunt by Russ Wiles. A discussion of pay and staff turnover at the Arizona Corporation Commission, spurred by Anna Tovar, the panel's sole Democrat, has shifted into an investigation against her over alleged ethical and legal violations. The commission voted 4-0 during an open meeting on November 22nd, which Tovar declined to attend, to direct Thomas Van Flyne, the agency's general counsel, to investigate ethics code violations against her, as well as allegations of Arizona Administrative Code violations. Tovar is accused of violating executive session confidentiality and the breach of confidential employment information. Protecting confidential information legitimately discussed behind closed doors is the standard practice at all levels of government. Commissioner Tovar stands accused of ethics violations and statutory violations, the commission said in a terse announcement on November 22nd that also noted the 4-0 vote and the inquiry to be conducted by Van Flyne's office. Details of what's alleged were sparse. Tovar, a prominent statewide Democrat, denies the allegations and, in an interview with the Arizona Republic, called the actions a political witch hunt. Van Flyne said his office will complete the inquiry and provide a recommendation to the commission within 10 days of the November 22nd vote. According to a commission spokeswoman, further details will be held in confidence until the investigation has been completed, when the report will be made public. Republicans occupy the other 4 seats on the panel, which sets rates for many utilities, including the Arizona Public Service and oversees other businesses and industries in the state. Republicans won the elections for the 3 open positions and will have a 5-0 majority when the new commission convenes during a swearing-in ceremony on January 6th. The new members are Rachel Walden and Renee Lopez, while Commissioner Leah Marquez-Peterson was reelected. 2 other commissioners, Nick Myers and Kevin Thompson, did not face re-election. Jim O'Connor is the commission's outgoing chairman. In a November 22nd letter to the commission, Tovar cited what she called a staffing problem at the agency, including 20% turnover in the utilities division. She suggested that a bonus approved for Doug Clark, the agency's executive director, could have been used to pay bonuses to the staff to help solve the problem this commission is facing. The commission on November 6th approved, on a 4-1 party vote, a $20,000 one-time bonus to Clark. In her letter to the commission, Tovar asserted her innocence of any violations and cited several instances where she said the commission or its staff weren't following proper procedures. In one instance, Tovar said any relevant complaints regarding the commission's code of ethics should be submitted in writing and under oath by the ethics officer, but that her office hadn't received any such written complaints. She added that Van Flyne, the commission's chief counsel, currently serves in the ethics officer role. To that, Tovar indicated she feels the conflict of interest for the legal division to represent commissioners against other commissioners. Tovar said Van Flyne sent an email indicating that his office can't represent her or personally advise her in the matter. Based on that, it appears the chief counsel is acting in a prosecutorial manner when his job is simply to pass along ethics complaints when received, she said in her letter. In addition, Tovar said it appeared Van Flyne is taking my letter personally by making accusatory statements in his email based on a disagreement over Clark's compensation. My main point was the money could be used to help with staff retention, Tovar said in her letter. Tovar said she questioned why the commission didn't conduct a performance evaluation and said there weren't any objective metrics or criteria used to evaluate Clark's performance, calling the process very subjective. Tovar has also said she pressed her fellow commissioners to no avail to establish a more formalized process for dealing with complaints. Since Clark was hired in April 2023, Tovar said the agency has lost attorneys, is dealing with a revolving door of staff in the utilities division, and faces a lawsuit from a prior chief counsel over alleged discrimination and a violation of equal pay law. While Tovar said she doesn't necessarily blame him for these issues, nothing has improved during Mr. Clark's time at the helm. You can reach the writer at russ.wiles@arizonarepublic.com. Next, we have a USA Today article titled, Space Business Sale Would Mark End of an Era. Experts, Boeing Deal Could Create Jobs in Florida, by Rick Neal. If struggling aerospace giant Boeing sells off its space business as speculated, it would represent the end of a storied half-century on Florida's space coast. Last month, the Wall Street Journal reported Boeing is exploring the potential sale of its space business, including its International Space Station operations contract with NASA and Starliner, which malfunctioned in June during its first crewed flight. Previously, the publication reported in December 2023 that United Launch Alliance, which developed the Vulcan rocket, could be purchased by Blue Origin or another suitor. ULA is a joint partnership between Boeing and Lockheed Martin. Blue Origin is preparing to launch its mighty New Glenn rocket on its inaugural flight from Cape Canaveral. A repackaged sale of Boeing's key assets, like the Vulcan rocket and Starliner spacecraft, could conceivably create more jobs in Florida's Brevard County by adding or assisting a competitor to SpaceX, experts said. But there's also the risk that another aerospace giant buys Boeing's space assets to eliminate competition, a move that would be bad for the space coast and the industry at large. As for comment, a company spokesperson said, Boeing doesn't comment on market rumors or speculation, and a NASA spokesperson referred comment to Boeing. An expert, however, wasn't surprised. I've been expecting this for quite a while, honestly, said Greg Autry, Associate Provost for Space Commercialization and Strategy at the University of Central Florida. It's a place of very high risk. It's cool, and I love it, and it's the industry I like most. But if I would be selling airplanes, I just don't need bad news, right? Space is a place that generates bad news because of its natural, risky environment. It's not a mature, stable industry that we have all figured out like aircraft, Autry said. So if I was CEO of Boeing, why would I keep space around? Starliner, developed under a 2014 $4.2 billion NASA Commercial Crew Contract, is designed to carry astronauts to the ISS. SpaceX, the other company awarded a grant that year, received $2.6 billion and developed the Dragon spacecraft. Dragon capsules have since flown 43 missions to the ISS, including September's NASA SpaceX Crew 9 launch. Meanwhile, Boeing's cost overruns have totaled at least $1.6 billion, Reuters reported. Starliner service module thrusters malfunctioned in low Earth orbit during that inaugural crewed mission in June. NASA deemed it too risky to have the spacecraft return NASA astronauts Butch Wilmore and Suni Williams. They remain on the ISS while Starliner parachuted uncrewed to a September landing in the New Mexico desert. Despite that high-profile problem, Autry says he thinks Starliner is a great spacecraft, assuming its technical issues can be resolved. Meanwhile, ULA crews are preparing for the third launch of the company's Vulcan rocket, which already boasts a backlog topping 70 missions. Those include 38 Amazon Project Kuiper missions and various national security missions. In my opinion, if you combine ULA with Starliner and you get Vulcan human-rated, that takes money, Autry said, probably hundreds of millions of dollars. but you've got a very viable competitor to SpaceX for both government and commercial human space flight. Autry said people were paying $60 million to $90 million to $100 million per seat to fly aboard SpaceX Dragons into low Earth orbit on missions organized by entities like Axiom and Polaris Dawn. He also said Boeing's ISS contract would be perfect for a company like Blue Origin or Axiom Space, which hopes to build the world's first commercial space station. I think there's a viable sale there. It's just we need to see it go soon and quick. And Boeing has got to be more nimble and reasonable than Boeing has been in the past. If they can do that, or they can find a buyer, then I think jobs could actually benefit and expand, Autry said. Boeing's history on the space coast goes back to the Apollo era. Its crews manufactured the first stage of NASA's mighty Saturn V moon rocket, which debuted in 1967. The aerospace company also built the core stages of the Space Launch System for NASA's Artemis moon rocket, which debuted in 2022. There's so many people that are still involved in space here on the Space Coast or are retired who can go back and say, well, back in the day, I worked with Boeing on such and such, said Don Platt, director of the Florida Institute of Technology's Spaceport Education Center. Boeing employs about 2,300 workers in Florida, a company spokesperson said. Platt said he remains unsure whether a sale of Boeing's space business would be good or bad. I guess it would really depend on who takes it over and what they plan to do with it. We certainly don't want to see a situation where someone takes it over simply to get rid of a competitor from the space industry. We want to see it still remain a group of programs and operations that are kind of unique, he said. That article was, Space Business Sale Would Mark End of an Era. By the way, if you miss a program, you can get it on demand at our website. Go to sunsounds.org/broadcastinfo and audio on demand. Karina Vanek brings us an article titled, Luxury Condos Near Old Town Scottsdale to Begin Construction in 2025. A five-story development that will include luxury condominium units and retail space near Old Town Scottsdale will begin construction in the first quarter of 2025. The project, called the Goldwater Residences, is planned for a 1.2-acre vacant site at the southeast corner of Goldwater Boulevard and 70th Street, and is being developed by Spain-based Adelanto in partnership with Peoria-based Plazacos. The development is Adelanto's first project in the United States. We love the location on Goldwater Boulevard. We love the Goldwater name. It just resonated with us from the first second, Sharon Harper, CEO and chairman of Plazacos, said. Harper said that developers plan to collaborate with nearby arts programs, including the Scottsdale Artist School and the Western Spirit Scottsdale's Museum of the West. Our interest in collaborating is with what Scottsdale is all about, Harper said. The project will have 40 for-sale condo units with two or three bedrooms each and about 7,500 square feet of commercial space on the ground floor. The residential portion will have a pool, fitness center, covered dog park, and stacked car parking system where residents can order their cars to be moved and ready for them when they want to leave, Elizabeth Berry, Senior Director of Development for Plazacos, said. Construction will take about 20 months, so the development will open near the end of 2027. Even though the project has not begun construction, buyers have begun to reserve units for purchase, Harper said. About 25% of the units have been reserved for buyers. You can reach the reporter at cvanek@arizonarepublic.com. Follow her on X, formerly Twitter, at CRINAVANEK. And we'll wrap up today's business news with an article titled, Funko Opens Toy Outlet in Buckeye, Brings Action Figures, Bobbleheads, and 300 Jobs, by Alexandra Hartle. Funko, a beloved toy company, has opened its doors in Buckeye after a much-anticipated wait. Over 2 years ago, the Washington-based pop culture toymaker announced that it would be moving its distribution operations to Buckeye, bringing 300 jobs to the city. At the time, the warehouse was touted as one of the initiatives to bring more jobs to the city. While the warehouse is still operational, Funko now has an Autel Rietlet store at the same location, which was announced in 2022. The Last Chance store is located at the warehouse, which is located at 2600 South Miller Road. The area is located right next to the Five Below Warehouse and Distribution Center, which also has a retail store built into it. Funko is known for its figurines and bobbleheads, which are licensed and pop culture related. Funko also sells things like apparel, action figures, and games. For example, some of the new releases on the Funko website include various Marvel-related figures and figures from films like Mona 2 and Wicked. However, the company produces products from dozens of franchises and lines, such as Star Wars, as well as public figures and celebrities, leading to collectors. Some discontinued products can be found on sites like eBay for thousands of dollars. The Last Chance store will give collectors an opportunity to purchase collectibles before they hit the triple-digit range. The store will be open Thursdays through Sundays from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. You can reach the reporter at ahardle@gannett.com or by phone at 480-708-1633. Follow her on X, formerly Twitter, at Alexandra Hartle. Today's sports page features a photo of Kevin Durant and Bradley Beal, and the lead article is titled, "Help on the Way." Stars Durant, Beal, set to return for Cup game versus Lakers, by Dwayne Rankin. Phoenix Suns guard Bradley Beal was starting to cook on offense when he began to experience tightness in his left calf on November 12th against the Utah Jazz. Beal hasn't played since, but is poised to return for Tuesday's NBA Cup West Group B game against the Los Angeles Lakers, 10-6, at the Footprint Center. "Definitely feel a lot better. Definitely good rehab process," Beal said after Monday's practice. "Thankful we had the schedule that we had, so we got some rest days, Kevin Durant and I. I feel great. Getting excited about Tuesday and get back going." Kevin Durant and Beal are probable for Tuesday, as both practiced Monday after playing 5-on-5 Sunday at the team's practice facility. Having 5 days between Wednesday's home loss to the New York Knicks and Tuesday's matchup against the Lakers gave Durant and Beal time to recover. The Suns, 9-7, went 1-6 without Durant, losing their last five minus Durant and Beal, who haven't played since their last win on November 12th against the Utah Jazz. Beal believes the team's held it together in the locker room during a rough stretch. The Suns played their last 7 games in 11 days before this 5-day break. "One of the toughest things in the league, especially when you are a guy that's out, is that communication part," Beal said. "With giving advice to guys, giving that encouragement, especially if you've missed a lot of games. If you've missed a lot of games, sometimes your voice becomes a little watered down, but at the same time, having that experience and guys understanding you've been in the league a long time, you've seen highs and lows, you're a true pro, they respect your voice at the end of the day." Suns coach Mike Budenholzer said he expects Durant and Beal to play Tuesday as they did everything in Monday's practice. "It's going to be great having those two guys back in the starting lineup," Suns rookie Ryan Dunn said. "Bringing that extra firepower back to the team is going to help us a lot." Phoenix will look to regain the rhythm established with its 8-1 start. "We need to be ready to go," Budenholzer said. "We can't be waiting. We can't be wondering. But to be truly kind of know what you have and everything like that. I think we've been without Brad and without Kevin for a little bit here. I think we'll keep growing, and in some ways, you keep growing throughout the whole year, to be honest." Without those two, Devin Booker faced a constant double teams, a strategy that favored the Suns' 1-6 slump. "At the beginning of the year, they really couldn't help because you had Brad, Kevin, and me, all the guys hitting shots," Dunn said. "Once those two got here, they just said we're going to start doubling Devin and making us plays, which is cool. We're getting reps with that. I think it's going to help us a lot. We've been working on that as well as when they do double." Durant last played on November 8th against the Dallas Mavericks when he strained his left calf. Durant grabbed at it during a timeout in the fourth quarter of a 114-113 road escape. Scoring 26 points against the Mavs, Durant leaves the Suns in scoring 7.6 points a game. He originally scheduled for a two-week reevaluation this past weekend. Beal suffered his injury versus the Jazz in Salt Lake City as he checked out of the game with 7:19 remaining and didn't return. Phoenix won 120-112 in its group play opener. Beal initially thought this was a carryover from DeMar DeRozan rolling into his left knee in overtime of a November 9th home loss to the Sacramento Kings. Staying in the game, Beal scored a season-high 28 points. He dropped 24 points in 29 minutes in Phoenix's next game against the Jazz. The Suns haven't won since defeating the 4-12 Jazz. Have an opinion about the current state of the Suns? Read Suns Insider Dwayne Rankin at dmrankin@gannett.com or contact him at 480-810-5518. Follow him on X, formerly Twitter, at Dwayne Rankin. Support local journalism. Start your online subscription. Tonight's game, Lakers at Suns. Where? Footprint Center. Time, TV, 8 p.m. on TNT. We turn next to ASU football with an article titled Sun Devils Working on Late Game Situations by Logan Stanley. After further review, Kenny Dillingham would like a mulligan. It's my job as a football coach to know what is best for our football team, and what was best for our football team was not to do what I did, he said, following his late game decision-making in Arizona State's 28-23 win over BYU this past weekend, which included a pair of failed fourth down attempts and an unsuccessful attempt to run the clock out, Dillingham had time to sit and think about it all. He defended the fourth down calls at his weekly Monday news conference, saying 100% he would do it 10 out of 10 times, but he would likely redo the very end. Instead of scoring to potentially go up 25-3 and establish a 12-point lead with less than a minute to play following cornerback Jovan Robinson's interception, Dillingham instructed quarterback Sam Leavitt to run backward on one play, to take time off a drive, and then throw a deep pass out of bounds on the final play of the drive. What started out as a second and goal at the BYU 3-yard line ended up as a fourth and goal at the BYU 49. Officials determined there was 1 second left on the clock and gave BYU one final play, a Hail Mary attempt from midfield that was nearly completed. The end of the game was not good at all, probably the worst-case scenario, Dillingham said. It worked horribly. I probably would have tried to score and take the risk of fumbling over what we did. It's a one-point lead. We have to do what we did. And that's where we got to get better. I got to coach that scenario better. I didn't do a good enough job throughout the week, and I haven't been doing a good job throughout the week of those scenarios at the end of the game. Dillingham added that the team's execution at the end of the game was a direct reflection of his coaching. There was a plan in the preseason to address the specific types of situations in a walkthrough session during Thursday's practice, but Dillingham decided to cut it out. Dillingham wanted to focus on keeping the time down instead. He regrets it. Now looking back, he said, it was a horrible decision. And it almost came back to bite us. That wasn't the first time the Sun Devils were in a situation like this. Officials put 1 second back on the clock following a kneel down from Leavitt in the game against Texas State in September. Moving forward, those walkthrough sessions will be put in to try to prevent something like the BYU game from happening again. And ASU will need it too, with 6 of its 9 wins this season coming by 8 points or fewer. It could come up again next week in a rivalry game. With a win in the regular season finale against Arizona in the Territorial Cup, ASU will likely be in the Big 12 Conference Championship on December 7th at AT&T Stadium in Arlington, Texas. But that's not quite win and you're in for the Sun Devils. There is a bizarre scenario where Arizona State could still win and not make the title game. Dillingham, keeping the status quo, hasn't even begun to try to decipher the matrix of the Big 12 tiebreaker scenarios, or the lone one which a win doesn't send them to Texas. 9 teams are still in the mix. I haven't thought about it. I'm a positive thinker, Dillingham said. Now, if you ask that question to my wife, she probably could give you a good answer. She always thinks about what's the worst thing that could happen, and I always think about the best. That's why we've been together 17 years. We're perfect. I don't think about the negative. What's the best possible outcome? That's what's going to happen. Just think like that, over and over again. And it's contagious. All that from an article titled Sun Devils Working on Late Game Situations. Next, we have an article by Theo Mackey titled Beecham Might Have Helped Cards O-Line Troubles. A debate raged this week, even if the opinions of fans and talking heads will never permeate the halls of the Cardinals facility. On the one hand, Jonah Williams, their $30 million free agent signing at right tackle, was ready to return from a knee injury suffered in Week 1. On the other hand, Kevin Beachum, his veteran backup, has not allowed a single pressure over the past 5 weeks. So, do you stick with what's working or return the starter to his job? The Cardinals opened for the latter in a clumsy, ugly, deflating 16-6 loss to the Seahawks. Their results only stoked the fire. They allowed 5 sacks and 14 pressures. They didn't get any push in the run game. The offense put together its worst output in a calendar year, and it began up front with the offensive line. But to pin those struggles on one change at right tackle, to pin those struggles on Williams is a flawed conclusion. Just ask Jonathan Gannon. "No, I don't," Gannon said firmly when asked whether lack of continuity hampered the offensive line. Let's start with the obvious. Williams is an established starting caliber tackle who was signed to fill that role for the Cardinals. In his lone quarter of action back in Week 1, he was excellent, helping the offensive line to a hot start. The Cardinals aren't paying him $30 million over 2 seasons to sit on the bench for this 7-game stretch run. And this was the perfect time to reinsert him. As much as any other position, the offensive line requires communication and chemistry among teammates. And because of their bye week, the Cardinals had an extra practice on Monday to rebuild that chemistry. Plus, Williams returned to practice in late October ahead of the Cardinals game against the Bears. They used his full 3-week practice window, maximizing the routes he got alongside his teammates before returning to live action. "I thought we were fine in communication," Williams said. "I just think it came down to execution." That execution did not start and end with one player. Take the 5 sacks Arizona allowed. On the first, there was a miscommunication on the left side of the line. Paris Johnson Jr. let a rusher come off the edge unblocked, the second time that has happened in as many games. On the second, both guards were beaten, forcing Murray to step up into the pocket. The Cardinals were pinned back into the 3rd and 14, a symptom of an inability to run effectively. So Seattle brought 6 pass rushers. Rushing running back Amari DeMarco couldn't deal with his man, and Murray went down. On the third, the pocket again collapsed from the interior, and the left guard, Evan Brown, stepped on Murray. On the fourth, Murray didn't feel a rusher coming off the left side and moved directly into him, again on 3rd and long. Only on the fifth was Williams finally culpable, allowing Boyan Maffey to beat him to the inside and flush Murray from the pocket. There's more to the story than those 5 plays. Murray also struggled mightily, even when he avoided sacks. He completed 1 of 8 passes for 4 yards when pressured per Pro Football Focus. But those sacks illustrate the nuance present in the Cardinals' struggles. The entire offensive line had its faults. Murray occasionally held on to the ball too long. Receivers didn't get open. The pocket was collapsing a little too much, Gannon said, and that goes in all 11. That's not just the O-line. That's the quarterback, the backs, the receivers, timing, rhythm. Take, for example, Murray's interception, which was returned for a touchdown. Offensive coordinator Drew Petzing called for a quarterback keeper with Michael Wilson slipping out into the flat as an option if the Seahawks took away the run. Seattle defended the play well, with cornerback Devin Witherspoon occupying the empty space to the right side. But afterward, Wilson took the blame. He felt he didn't sell his block well enough, preventing him from winning outside leverage. Because he was covered, Murray floated an ill-advised pass into a group of blue jerseys. "My job. I feel like I could have been a little bit better," Wilson said in the Cardinals' locker room. That accountability was widespread. "I know I had a rough day," right guard Tristan Colon said. "It starts with me," Murray added. Williams offered the same tune. "I could have done better," he said, getting back out there, shaking some rust off. Those struggles from the whole team showed up in big moments like the sacks and the interceptions, but also in forgotten ones. Earlier in the second quarter, Murray had an opportunity for a big play under pressure on the 3rd down, but Greg Dortch didn't track to the football, allowing a Seahawks defender to break up the pass. On the next possession, Murray tried a dangerous throw over the middle to Harrison, which could have been another interception. "Every play," Wilson said. "There's little things, that every single person could do better. Those are the mistakes the Cardinals largely avoided for a month as they rattled off a four-game winning streak. They returned on Sunday, but did not return because of one player or one decision. Now it's the Cardinals' job to make one bad game an aberration. You are listening to Hour 2 of the Arizona Republic for Tuesday, November 26th, 2024. I'm your Sun Sounds of Arizona volunteer broadcaster, Joe Napoli. You can take Sun Sounds with you. You can get both streaming and on-demand programs on our new Sun Sounds of Arizona app, available for both Apple and Android phones. Our next article is titled, ALA West Foothills Without Its Top Star, Brutus vs. Putch Ridge, by Richard Obert. American leadership West Foothills made history Saturday, reaching the 3A state football finals for the first time. But it was bittersweet. In the fourth quarter, the Guardians lost the heart and soul of the team, senior edge rusher running back J.J. Brutus. He didn't get to celebrate after the win over Thatcher because he was in the hospital getting ready for emergency surgery the next day. Brutus suffered a fractured femur and had to be taken by ambulance off the field. Coach Chad Mitten was with Brutus at the hospital Sunday when he underwent surgery. He was back there Monday, encouraging him. He got up and walked a little bit, Mitten said, so just get him on the road to recovery. Mitten said a rod was inserted into Brutus's leg. He's hopeful Brutus will be on track in the spring, running and making a full recovery in time to play college football somewhere. He has run 40 yards in 4.5 seconds. A college would be a fool not to take him, Mitten said. If he's able to, Brutus will be back at ALA West Foothills 3A championship game on Saturday at 6 p.m. when the Guardians, 13-0, take on Tucson Putch Ridge at Glendale Mountain Ridge High School. Mitten said that Brutus would be at midfield for the coin toss as one of the team captains. Brutus helped ALA West Foothills make history in only its third year playing football, leading the state in all classifications with 17.5 sacks. After starting sophomore tailback Kenyon Rosenthal suffered a broken ankle in the first-round playoff over El Mirage, Dyshirt Brutus covered his spot with punishing runs. Brutus wound up with 119 yards and 3 TBs on 9 carries in that game. The next week, in a semifinal win over Edgar Round Valley, Brutus ran for 210 yards and 2 TDs on 24 carries. Now the Guardians will have to come up with a game plan to make it work against a punishing Putch Ridge defense that slowed down Benjamin Franklin, Queen Creek, in a 24-13 semifinal win. This history-making season took a lot of hard work, Mitten said. If we played well, we knew we'd be there at the end, he said. The difference for us this year, we have a lot of good players. We have other kids who can help us win. You don't replace him. You just have to figure a way to try to replace the points, replace what he does. Putch Ridge, which is 12-1, has come a long way since the early season when it lost to Benjamin Franklin 31-7. The Lions have rolled over since. When Mitten saw them beat Thatcher 22-7 in late October, he knew they were good enough to reach the state final. Putch Ridge, led by coach Ken Middleton, relies on a strong defense and an efficient offense led by quarterback Jacob Newborn, who has passed for 1,913 yards and 26 touchdowns and ran for 661 yards and 14 TDs. Blake Reed has added 13 rushing scores, and Sawyer Allen added 8 more on the ground. They're very disciplined. They do things well, Mitten said. They're very well coached. Good kids. Mitten is going to have to put more emphasis on his son, quarterback Hudson Mitten, to lead the offense. Hudson, a junior, has thrown for 1,631 yards and 22 TDs, with 7 of those scores going to Alden Anyata. Mitten is hoping to have the middle linebacker, Hunter Cotton, back for the championship game. He missed the semifinal with a sprained ankle. Cotton has helped carry out offense and has gained 242 yards, averaging 6.7 yards a carry. Last year, injuries late in the season derailed the Guardians, who lost to Round Valley in the first round. This team seems somewhat better equipped to bounce back from big blows. Cotton was the region's Defensive Player of the Year with Brutus, the overall POY. Cotton couldn't play, and the other kids filled in, Mitten said. Last year, we couldn't have done that. Even without Brutus, whom he feels is the best football player in 3A, Mitten still believes in his team. We have our work cut out. We don't plan on losing, I can tell you that. Richard Obert has been covering high school sports since the 1980s for the Arizona Republic. He also covers Grand Canyon University Athletics and the Arizona Rattlers. To suggest human interest story ideas and other news, reach out to Obert at rachard.obert@arizonarepublic.com or 602-316-8827. Follow him on X, formerly Twitter, @AZC_OBERT. We turn from sports to Lori Roberts' column, which today she's titled, Robbins Isn't Working at UA and Still Gets a Cushy Bonus. So I see that the University of Arizona's former president just got a five-figure bonus while continuing to collect a six-figure state salary for a job he isn't doing, all while he's away in California. Nice gig if you can swing it. And apparently you can if you work for the Arizona Board of Regents. The Arizona Daily Star reports that the Regents this month awarded former UA President Robert C. Robbins a $40,000 bonus for meeting goals set by the board for 2023-2024. Apparently, one of those goals wasn't financial stability, as Roberts is the guy who led UA into a full-on header down a financial and reputational black hole earlier this year. A swan dive that followed a shrewd decision to secretly acquire a for-profit online college best known for scamming students into borrowing money, thinking they were getting an education. Roberts stepped down as president on September 30th upon appointment of his replacement, but he'll continue to collect his $734,407 base presidential salary through June 30th, 2026. To be fair, Robbins volunteered both to take a 10% pay cut and to forego other bonuses before heading off on a sabbatical that will last the duration of his presidential contract. That was big of him, given he left the university with a $177 million deficit that led to pay freezes and the elimination of 328 jobs. But now he scored a $40,000 bonus, one of four handed out this month to each of the university presidents and the region's former executive director for growing international initiatives and supporting the Arizona Promise program that provides free tuition to qualified low-income Arizona students. No doubt the bonus was required by the contract he negotiated with the Board of Regents. Funny that contract didn't also require him to leave the university solvent. These days, Robbins is a visiting fellow at Stanford University's Hoover Institution. In case you're wondering, that's a public policy think tank that seeks to improve the human condition by advancing ideas that promote economic opportunity and prosperity while securing and safeguarding peace for America and all mankind. I don't know about prosperity for all mankind, but he certainly secured a smoking deal for himself, courtesy of those shrewd negotiators on the Arizona Board of Regents. Robbins is on a sabbatical from UA until his contract and his seven-figure presidential paycheck end 19 months from now, at which time he'll return and become a tenured faculty member as a cardiothoracic surgeon at UA's Tucson College of Medicine. Something to consider next time you hear the Regents whining to the legislature about their dire need for more of our money. You can reach Roberts at laurie.roberts@arizonarepublic.com. Follow her on X, formerly Twitter, @laurieroberts. On Threads @LoriRobertsAZ and on Blue Sky @LoriRobertsBSKY Social. You can now hear sun sounds on your Echo Dot or other smart home device. We now turn to today's horoscopes. For more, go to www.sanctuaryworld.com. Aries, March 21st to April 19th. An expansive social energy breezes around you. There is plenty of situations for engaging in harmonious conversation. Taurus, April 20th to May 20th. Balance idealism and practicality. Growing your finances may interfere with your freedom. Can you have the best of both worlds? Gemini, May 21st to June 21st. Feeling light as a feather and fancy free? Your spirit is buoyant until serious underlying considerations erupt. Cancer, June 22nd to July 22nd. Withdraw to connect with your core. Taking a spiritual retreat can feel mentally renewing. Leo, July 23rd to August 22nd. In search of creative solutions, get the support of colleagues and friends. Engage the hive mind. Virgo, August 23rd to September 22nd. Lucrative career opportunities are flowing smoothly. But is this expansion at the expense of your playtime? Balance may be off. Libra, September 23rd to October 23rd. A wanderlust desire can create tension within your foundation. Scorpio, October 24th to November 21st. An internal intellectual exploration may beckon to you today. The Libra moon sets the stage for enriching introspection. Sagittarius, November 22nd to December 21st. Your generosity is overflowing today. Agreeing to do something for everyone who asks, reassess the value of saying yes. Capricorn, December 22nd to January 19th. Taking care of business, the work that is on your plate ramps up. Whistle while you work. Aquarius, January 20th to February 18th. Leave your comfort zone. If you quell your fears, a new social experience can be fun. Pisces, February 19th to March 20th. There is growth in vulnerability. Is there something on your mind that you want to share with others? And that will do it for today's horoscopes. It looks like Dear Abby is giving a lot of marital advice today. The lead of her piece today is titled, Husband Becomes a Roadblock to Redecorating Revival. Dear Abby, I've been with my husband for 10 years. For a long time, I didn't decorate our house because I didn't want to spend the money. But for the last few years, I've spent many hours poring over Pinterest. I love interior decorating and know exactly how I want each room of the house to look. The problem is my husband. I once tried to buy a new shower curtain. It was a huge debacle because he didn't like the one I'd chosen. Abby, I have done my homework. How do I convince my husband to give me free rein in decorating? I'm afraid every paint color and every piece of furniture is going to be an argument, and I'm so discouraged, I don't even try. We've had the same curtains, bedding, and dining room table for years, and our house is very ugly. Should I just start making changes without consulting him? Should I sit down and talk to him? Is it fair of me not to take his preferences into account? Signed, Frustrated Creative. Dear Frustrated, by all means, discuss this with your husband before making any changes. Under no circumstances should you make any without consulting him. It would be extremely unfair to ignore his opinion. Some compromises will have to be made. The least contentious way to accomplish this would be with the help of a professional decorator who can take both your preferences into account and help you to blend them. Dear Abby, my husband and I have been married for 16 years, together for 22. He's the love of my life, my sunshine and roses. He's a great husband and an even better father. You're probably wondering why on earth I'm writing to you. Well, his teeth are disgusting. They are stained, chipped, and just gross. He is overcoming some self-esteem issues regarding his weight. He has lost a good bit, and I'm super proud of him. But how do I say great job? But there's still something wrong with you. For the record, his weight means nothing to me. I never pushed him to be slim or buff, but rather to be healthy and have enough stamina to keep with our kids and get off the CPAP machine. Money and the dental expenses aren't an issue, but he would rather spend extra money doing fun things as a family, making memories and having adventures, which is great. I just wish he could have a nice smile while doing it. Advice? Not quite perfect. In Ohio. Dear, not quite. Because your husband's teeth are a turnoff, you are going to have to address the problem. Wait until he is at or near his goal weight. Then tell him that although you adore him, you would find him more kissable if he would deal with his dental issue. Tell him that putting it off may make the problem more difficult to fix. Your family dentist may be able to help or refer him to a good cosmetic dentist. You can contact Abby at www.dearabby.com or P.O. Box 69440, Los Angeles, California, 90069. Now we turn to today's comics. Let's start with Blondie. We have Dagwood driving his car, talking out the window with Herb. Herb yells, "Let me guess, you strapped your Thanksgiving turkey in with a seatbelt." Dagwood says, "Nope, that is so. Last year, Woodley, try to keep up." Dagwood gets out of the car and is holding a child seat. And Herb says, "A child safety seat? Are you kidding me?" Dagwood says, "I could have been pulled over, too. It was supposed to be facing backwards." Let's have a look at Zitz. We have Jeremy hugging his mom, saying, "I'm sorry that I'm such a pain sometimes, Mom." She says, "That's okay. It comes with the territory." Jeremy pushes against her shoulders and says, "In that case," Mom says, "don't push it." With Peanuts, we have Peppermint Patty and Marcy walking along. Peppermint Patty says, "I've never gotten a gold star for anything, Marcy." The teacher gives gold stars for spelling, for attendance, for drinking milk, for everything, but I never got a gold star. "Have you ever gotten a gold star, Marcy?" Marcy says, "I got one for spelling, one for attendance, one for drinking milk, one for..." Peppermint Patty says, "Forget it, Marcy." With Beetle Bailey, we have Otto looking at the newspaper, thinking, "Sarge read my astrology forecast to me. Fame and fortune will never be yours. Hygienic habits may exclude you from social events. Frequent romances lead to nothing," Otto thinks. "I wonder how they knew I was a dog." With Baby Blues, we have Mom giving her son a bath. Son says, "Tennant has a new pet, and I'm super jealous." Mom says, "Oh, what did he get? A dog? A hamster?" "A bedbug. The playdate is off." We have Pickles. We have Pearl sitting in a chair and Earl going, "Ow, ow." And she says, "Are you still sore from falling out of bed?" Earl says, "We've got to get rid of those satin sheets. They're so dang slippery." She says, "They're satin sheets, not Satan sheets." Earl says, "I calls them as I sees them." In the family circus, they're in the grocery store. The mom's pushing the cart. And Dolly says to her dad, pointing at Billy, "He's mad because he got bumped from his seat by the groceries." And that'll do it for today's comics. For today's celebrity birthdays, comedian, impressionist Rich Little turns 86. Singer Gene Terrell of The Supremes is 80. Bassist John McVie of Fleetwood Mac is 79. Actor Marianne Morelli is 76. Actor Jamie Rose is 65. Actor Scott Adesit is 59. Actor Peter Finelli is 51. Actor Temi Lynn Michaels is 50. Record producer DJ Khaled is 49. Actor Maria Campbell is 48. Actor Jessica Bauman is 44. Rapper Lil Fizz is 39. Actor Aubrey Joseph is 27. For Today in History, today is Tuesday, November 26th, the 331st day of 2024. There are 35 days left in the year. On this date, in 1789, as designated by President George Washington on October 3rd, this was a day of national thanksgiving. When President Abraham Lincoln issued his Thanksgiving Proclamation in 1863, he also chose November 26th as a day to set apart and observe the last Thursday of November as a day of thanksgiving and praise. In 1939, the Queen of Rock and Roll, Tina Turner, was born in Brownsville, Tennessee. The influential musician was inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame twice, once as part of the duo Ike and Tina Turner, and once as a solo artist. In 1942, one of the most popular films ever made, the World War II drama Casablanca, premiered in New York. It went on to be nominated for 8 Academy Awards and won 3 for Best Picture, Best Director Michael Curtis, Best Adapted Screenplay. Humphrey Bogart was nominated for Best Actor. In 1965, France became the 6th country to put a satellite in orbit. asterisk or A1, the third to do so with its own rocket. In 1983, six armed men stole 6,800 gold bars from the Brinks Mat warehouse at Heathrow Airport in London. Most of the gold was never recovered. In 2011, NASA launched the Mars Space Laboratory with the rover Curiosity, which landed the following August. All by William Kane of the USA Today Network. Turning to the Things to Do section, Michael Salerno brings us a piece titled, Here's the Latest on the Opening of VAI Resort. The mega entertainment resort, poised to become Arizona's largest hotel, is taking shape as it anticipates opening next year. VAI Resort, scheduled to open in 2025, is the most anticipated newcomer to the Metro Phoenix tourism scene. Hospitality experts think it could redefine tourism in Arizona, making it competitive with Las Vegas for music residencies with its 11,000 capacity amphitheater. Other defining features, such as 5 acres of sandy beaches, a party island, spa and wellness center, luxury boutiques, and 12 restaurants anchored by a steakhouse with views of the amphitheater stage, aim to make VAI a destination in itself. Building an ambitious destination resort with so many features is not easy, and VAI has pushed back its opening several times as the project has grown in its size and scope. Here's what we know about VAI Resort, what it will have, and when it will open. What big resort is being built in Arizona? VAI Resort is under construction in Glendale. VAI's first phase will have 1,100 hotel rooms, an 11,000-seat amphitheater, sandy beaches with temperature-controlled water, a 50,000-square-foot European-inspired party island called Konos Island, the Konos Sky Bar that offers food and drinks at 130 feet in the air, and tethered hot air balloon rides where passengers can view desert and mountain vistas from 400 feet above the ground. In October 2024, the first of 12 VAI restaurants was announced. Bar Mar, with a menu focused on seafood, will also mark the first Arizona restaurant for Michelin-starred chef Jose Andres. VAI's second phase will include a second concert venue, a 2,000-person capacity multi-level indoor theater. Staff anticipates a late 2026 opening. The 9-acre Mattel Adventure Park will be adjacent to the resort. What are they building next to the Cardinal Stadium? The VAI Resort is under construction south of State Farm Stadium on Cardinals Way in Glendale. Renderings of the finished resort show State Farm Stadium, where the NFL's Cardinals play, is within view from inside the VAI Amphitheater. What happened to Crystal Lagoons? Crystal Lagoons was the original name for VAI Resort when the concept was proposed to the Glendale City Council, which unanimously approved it in 2020. Plans called for many features VAI Resort will have, including an artificial beach, amusement park rides, and a helium balloon offering aerial views of the area. Crystal Lagoons would have had 630 rooms compared to the 1,100 planned for VAI. VAI Resort LLC purchased the property from Crystal Lagoons in 2022 and expanded its footprint from 48 to 60 acres. Is the VAI Resort opening in 2024? No. VAI Resort's website has been updated with a new target opening date. When is VAI Resort opening? The most recent updates from VAI give a tentative opening date of late 2025. Who owns VAI Resort LLC? Grant Fisher is the owner of VAI Resort LLC. His father, Tommy Fisher, owns the Tempe-based Fisher Industries, which is involved in the resort's construction. The company's website describes it as a family of businesses in the aggregate production and heavy civil construction industries. Fisher Industries had a moment in the spotlight when it was hired for private border wall construction projects during Donald Trump's presidency. The most recent construction photos from Fisher Industries, published in September on the company's Facebook page, show progress being made in the front entrance of Amphitheater Tower, VAI Amphitheater Stage, and the Konos Sky Bar. How much will VAI Resort cost per night? Room rates will range from $500 to $900 per night, Fisher said. He didn't specify whether VAI Resort would charge a resort fee. How many rooms will VAI Resort have? VAI will have 1,100 rooms and suites across four towers. The Amphitheater Tower with 318 rooms, the Rhythm Tower with 311 rooms, and the Cadence Tower with 299 rooms. VAI Villas with 155 rooms. It would be the largest hotel in Arizona, surpassing the 1,003-room Sheraton Phoenix downtown. It will also trounce the sizes of the West Valley's and Westgate's Entertainment District's top hotels, with more than triple their capacity. The West Valley's largest resort hotel is the 343-room Blue Green Vacations Cuyaba Vista Resort and Spa near Lake Pleasant, about 20 miles northwest of VAI Resort. It will have 23 more rooms than the largest hotel at Westgate, Renaissance Phoenix Hotel and Spa. How big is VAI Resort? VAI is on 60 acres south of State Farm Stadium. What is the economic impact of VAI Resort? A 2023 economic analysis by Applied Economics presented to the Glendale City Council showed VAI Resort could generate $2.2 billion in taxes to the city, county, and state over the next 25 years, including $32.4 million annually to Glendale. Is VAI Resort hiring now? The job board on VAI's resort website had no job postings as of October 15th. Does VAI Resort have a casino? No. While VAI is envisioned as competing with Las Vegas mega resorts, it will lack one common feature that draws people to Vegas, a casino. That's because Arizona law allows casinos only on tribal land. It's the same reason Caesars Republic Scottsdale Hotel has no casino, even though other Caesars-branded properties, not limited to but including in Vegas, feature casinos. What amusement park is coming to Glendale? Mattel Adventure Park is coming to Glendale. It will have a Barbie beach house with a Barbie Dream Closet experience where guests can create their own Barbie sets, and hologram technology is used to bring Barbie to life right before guests' eyes. There will also be two Hot Wheels-themed roller coasters, the Hot Wheels Bone Shaker, the ultimate ride coaster which climbs 84 feet and drops down a double helix track, and the Hot Wheels Twin Mill Racer, which will have a double loop and two corkscrews. How big is Mattel Theme Park? Mattel Adventure Park is a 9-acre indoor-outdoor theme park. Is Mattel Adventure Park opening in 2024? No. Mattel Adventure Park's website updated to change the opening date from late 2024 to coming soon. Where is it being built? The park is just south of VAI Resort on 95th Avenue and Cardinals Way in Glendale. And that will do it for Hour 2 of the Arizona Republic for Tuesday, November 26, 2024. I'm your volunteer broadcaster, Joe Napoli, thanking you for listening and encouraging you to stay tuned for our other great programs on Sun Sounds of Arizona.